Welcome to
Tamarindo Podcast,
hosted by me, Brenda Gonzalez, a political nerd and nonprofit capacity builder.
And me, Ana Sheila Victorino, a queer well-being enthusiast and mindset coach. We are a Latinx empowerment podcast discussing politics, culture, and how to keep your calma with well-being practices and self-love.
Welcome to the show.
What's up, y'all? We're back.
Hello, hello. Welcome, everybody, to our next episode of Tamarindo. Later on the show, we are going to have a discussion on diet culture and body positivity. Joining us for that discussion is sociology professor and intuitive eating health coach, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, who approaches anti-dieting from an anti-oppressive social and racial lens. And also we'll have Miriam Lara Mejia, the creator of Gorda Feminista, a community of over 350,000 that focuses on making visible the discrimination, violence, and intolerance of fat phobia in the Latinx community. Fantastic conversation, which you will hear in just a moment. But before we do that, in many ways, this discussion connects to body autonomy and choice. Ana Sheila, you've shared on this podcast before how important it is for you to have the option to become a parent. And you've taken some steps recently towards that. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where you are in the process?
Yeah, I just completed the egg freezing process. It's a 2-week process, and I just completed that 2 days ago. So I had my eggies removed and I'm recovering from that. Yeah. So I literally just finished that process.
Yeah, literally a couple of days ago. So thank you for still doing this podcast, considering that you underwent that just a couple of days ago. So I know that our listeners have asked some questions about this process. That might be something that some of our listeners right now are considering or have already done it. So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that you can expect happen to your body.
Yeah. And so what I want to say is that everybody's body is different. And so that's really important to keep in mind, that what somebody else's experience is might not be your experience. Yours might be just different. Right. And so you're injecting yourself with hormones for 2 weeks in order to basically stimulate the growth of more eggies. And so what that means is that because you're injecting yourself with hormones, you can expect that you might have different emotional responses throughout this period. So perhaps you may notice that you are extra sensitive, or that you get triggered really quickly and you get angry, or you're really sad. So there is a range of emotional responses that you can have because you're shooting yourself up with hormones, but you might not have all really strong feelings. So it really depends on you. Let's see what else. You can expect potentially some headaches, some bloating. What else? Those are the main things you can expect from your body emotionally and physically during the process.
But what was it for you personally? How was your experience?
My experience and people, it's interesting because when I talked to American friends, they kind of scared me about what this was going to be like, which was very different from my experience with Mexican folks. Like people in the clinic, they're like, no, you're going to be fine. Or like my Mexican friends like, no, it's going to be chill. Thankfully, I had an overall relatively chill experience. I didn't really feel strong emotional responses from this, so I feel grateful for that. But I also was preparing myself for this, right? So I definitely did take some measures. I did share with close friends that I might be spending time with, both in order, both to be able to spend time with them if that was something that I needed, if I was feeling sad or wanting company, but also to let them know that I might have responses that might be a little bit out of character in case I did go off on them, you know? I had no idea, right? And so I sort of did my best to prepare for that. And also, you know, preparing myself to be a little bit extra sensitive, tried to be mindful of what kind of energy I was around and what I was doing. So that's kind of how I prepared myself for the potential emotional reactions. And beyond that, I had slight headaches, very limited bloating, but I just kind of took it easy. I noticed that I got extra tired. So fatigue is another potential symptom. Like normally I walk so much, exercise so much, but during this process, you're not supposed to be working out. So I didn't work out. But I noticed that walking 15 minutes or 20 minutes would get me really tired. So definitely a little bit of extra fatigue for sure.
Yeah, and you kind of just touched a little bit on the things you had to avoid. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the recommendations? Like, what did you have to do during this process or stop from doing?
Yeah, so you can't drink any alcohol. You can't smoke. You are not supposed to eat raw fish. You cannot work out. So no high intensity, no lifting, no dancing. Really what they recommend is just walking. Walking is good. It's good for your circulation and that's it. So that was actually probably the hardest thing for me to let go of is the working out. But I really didn't have time because you're also going into the clinic every other day because they're checking in to see how you're responding to medication. They're looking at how your eggs are growing to determine what adjustments they might make to the medication dosage. So yeah, I feel like I basically this time you're dedicating yourself to this process. That's really what you're thinking, all you're thinking about.
Did you have to slow down your work commitments and other things? Like, did you plan for that in advance? Like, okay, I got to scale back on this and that.
A little bit. Yeah. I think I just let people know this is happening because you just really don't know how this is going to go. And overall, I still was able to work for the most part, my regular schedule. And I think that the visits to the clinic took the place of my gym time. So instead of an hour and a half of gym or 1.5 hours to 2 hours in terms of like getting there, getting back, all that, that was instead dedicated to getting to the clinic and back. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the recommendations that you have for getting through this process with your well-being intact? How do you keep your calma through this?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the most important thing. More than anything else, it's preparing yourself emotionally for this process. Because besides what's happening with the hormones, there's so many other things that are coming up, right? Around fertility, around timing of this, around, there's just so many things that you're thinking about during this. And so I think the most important recommendation that I have for folks, and we've talked about this on previous episodes, it's like you can't control, this is a time where you cannot control how this is going to go. Your body is unique. You get these, you know, people tell you what might happen, but you have no idea. You don't know how it's going to interrupt your activities. And so it's really about letting go of, really surrendering and letting go of control. Because the other thing is you really don't want to be stressed during this process. And one mistake that I feel like I made is like, oh my God, my life is going to change during these 2 weeks. And I tried to do the most. I was doing so, so much right up until the day that I started this. And I would not recommend that to folks. Like, you want to be really chill going into this. And so that's a recommendation. Because I ended up getting sick. I ended up getting sick and I don't know what kind of impact that had on me. So I actually had a little bit of a cold through this process because I was doing the most right before. So just really listen to your body, be as loving to your body as you can through this. And I mean, these are things we want to do all the time anyways, right? Like we want to listen to our body. We want to be as loving as possible. And this is a time to really go in and practice that and embody that and give yourself grace through what your body's feeling, what you're mentally feeling, and reminding yourself also, this is not my normal experience. So let me not be hard on myself. Let me give myself grace. You're under a lot of hormones. So whatever reactions or feelings, they're not your normal feelings. Just grace, love, compassion, listening, loving. And then another important recommendation that I'm actually going to make my calma today is it's also really important to set boundaries with your family and be mindful of who you're sharing this information with. And especially specifically because people love giving you unsolicited advice. So my calma, and I'm kind of putting my cousin in la basura a little bit. I love him, pero. but basically my cousin asked me how I was doing. And I said, I'm doing all right. I'm going through this process, kind of intense. And then instead of saying like, you know, how are you feeling? Like asking more questions. He's like, oh, well, you should just have a baby now because X, Y, and Z. And it was just, it really came off insensitive to me because if I'm doing this process, I've already committed to not having a baby right now. And you're not going to help me raise this baby. So why are you telling me that you think that I should just have a baby now and that I shouldn't wait any longer, you know? And so basically I had to tell him, you know, I'm doing this because I made this decision. And I know your intentions are not bad, but you're not going to raise this baby. So if I don't ask you for your opinion on what to do with my life, don't offer it. We're all making the decisions that we think are best for ourselves. And that's what I'm thinking about all the pros and cons. This is a way for me to have an opportunity. I don't know what decision I'm going to make, but I really would appreciate your support in the fact that I made this decision, and just in the way that I would support how you decided whether you're going to have babies and when you're going to have them. Right. So I definitely went off a little bit on my primo, but he'd be doing that. He'd be offering unsolicited advice, and I never said anything. And this time around, it really just kind of got to me, and I had to.
I'm sure there's a lot of listeners relating to that. Now, kind of want to back up a little bit. Like, what is literally happening to your body? Like, what is it? What are they doing every day? What does it lead up to? What's the end of this process? And then what comes next?
So basically, what's happening during this process is your ovaries are being stimulated with hormones in order to produce multiple eggs. Normally, we would just have one egg, but the hormones make it so that more eggs are produced. And during this process, they're just growing. And at the end of it, once they get to a certain size, they're retrieved. They kind of just suck them up with a little vacuum. And you go at the end of, during the actual day of the procedure, they put you to sleep. And it's a very short procedure. It's just like 30 minutes or so. I don't actually really know exactly how long it was because I was asleep. And then I woke up in a different space.
But did that go by quickly? How did that feel? It was just like closing your eyes. I've never had surgery, so I'm just curious.
Yeah, it was my, like, Brenda, it was my first time too. And I remember I was telling them, I'm like, oh, I feel kind of weird because I've never just... Am I really just going to fall asleep? Like, does this really work?
And then, I mean, it is true that some right. people do not actually fall asleep. Well, so. It's a real fear.
Well, right after I said that statement, I fell asleep.
Good.
I'm glad. So I fell asleep. I woke up in a different space. And then right after, you definitely feel like you have really strong cramps and you're like connected to an IV and stuff. And they're just like monitoring your heart rate and all of that and your blood pressure and then so you do get strong pains, but they inject some drugs into you and they work really fast, or like 15 minutes. So it wasn't 15 to 20 minutes. But yo, Brenda, it was so funny. So there was a woman next to me that came out right after me. And so she was under drugs. And so when you first wake up, you still feel good. You feel sleepy. So it feels kind of nice. But then the pain kicks in. So the girl next to me, she was chilling too, right? She was chilling, like, oh, I feel great. And then all of a sudden you start hearing her moaning because the pain just kicked in. And so she's like in pain and like drugged. And I thought I was being loud, but she was being loud. And at one point they asked her before they give her the drugs for the pain, they're like, oh, are you allergic to anything? And she's like, no, nada más camarones. No me van a poner camarones, ¿verdad? So she basically was like, I'm allergic to shrimp. You're not going to give me shrimp, are you? So that was hilarious.
Hilarious. Now, were you laughing and then in pain because of the laughter?
Yeah, the pain had started to subside a little bit, but hilarious. I was, yeah, that was the highlight of the day of the procedure.
That's hilarious. Okay, and then they extract these eggs and they put them in a freezer and fridge them for you?
Yeah, they basically, they put them in a lab and they hold on to them for you. And they hold on to them for you, I think, I don't know how many years, but you can hold them there for many
years.
You're
just paying rent. You're paying rent for your eggs, right?
You're paying rent. It's a storage. Basically, you have a storage room for your little eggies for whenever you're ready to use them. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks for walking us through that. Now, what about any additional resources or anything else you want to tell us about this experience?
Yeah. I mean, I think what I'll share, I mean, I decided to do this in Mexico, so I'll speak a little bit to that. I don't have insurance that would cover that in the US. There's very few companies. So only some of the biggest companies that actually cover this under insurance, unfortunately. So for me, it just really made sense to come. I mean, I'm living here in Mexico, so I didn't actually have to leave. And it just made a lot of sense for me to do this before I left. And what I paid was $5,000 was the cost of the whole thing, medication, procedure, everything. And how I chose my fertility clinic. I mean, I just looked at just Googled fertility clinics. I wanted to go specifically to a clinic where they just dedicate themselves to that. I think you can also go, you know, to the doctor, and do it that way. But I think fertility clinics are really nice because they're dedicating themselves very much to that, had really good, beautiful service throughout and support throughout the process. So I definitely recommend my fertility center, which was called Fertilidad Integral. And I can put that in the notes for folks that where this might make sense for them to come to Mexico. Again, it's 5K. Any other questions that I felt that we can touch on?
I know that you've shared this with me, but if you want to share this with the listeners too, is that you're going to do this again.
Yeah. I'm going to do this again. Since I'm doing this at all, I really wanted to make sure that my outcome was one that produced enough eggs for one or potentially two babies. And I just wanted to potential babies. And so a recommendation that I just want to give to folks that are thinking about this is, if you know that you're going to wait a long time for this, or maybe if you're not even sure if you want to have kids, but you might, but you think if you do that it will be a long time from now, then what I would do is as soon as you're 30, go and see how you're doing, check your hormone levels. And also don't let however things turn out be a judgment of you as a person, which I think can also, we can also feel, especially as folks that have grown up as women, because there's so much of our value that has been tied to us making babies, traditionally. So I also want to just let people know, like, this says what, however things are for you, doesn't reflect your worth or your value as a woman or a person, however you identify, right? So I also want to share that. But yeah, go get your hormone levels checked out, because fertility is related to so many different things. Go get checked out. And then I think the ideal age generally to do this, because it is around 34 to 36 is the ideal age, because then our egg count starts to reduce much, starts to go down much, much faster. So that's something to consider. And you might do this twice because of so many things. Maybe you were really stressed, or maybe you're a little bit older. And what's nice though, is that the doctors, if you do it once and you have to do it again, the doctors know how you reacted to certain medicine. So you can have a much better outcome the second time by just the doctors making adjustments to your dosage. So that's something else to consider too, if this is something that you decide to, if it makes sense for you to also do it twice as well. So I wanted to share a few little things about that.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ana Sheila. You've given us some great insight. I know that it's something that our listeners were curious about, and you've been very generous to walk us through it. And of course, we're hoping that you heal up right away, because I know this is very soon. You literally just had this procedure. And yeah. So hoping that everything goes smoothly this time around and the second time around. So thank you so, so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I was feeling, so I did this on Wednesday. We're recording on Friday. And then yesterday, I was feeling awesome and I decided to go out dancing. So a recommendation for y'all, take it easy. It's also very important that you take it easy for at least a week or more after this procedure. So don't do what I did and go out dancing the day after because you thought you felt amazing, because this morning I'm not feeling as great. So that's my other recommendation. And the last thing I want to do, Brenda, is I want to give a matraca out to my friends, to my college friends. I have two college friends that happen to be here in Mexico City. And there's something just about the connection with our friends from college. Like, there's one that I've stayed really, really close with, one of my best friends, and the other one, not as much, but it's like, we're here together and it's like no time has passed and they're just so down for you. There's just something about that college connection. So they really came through for me during this time. They met with me that day and really made me feel loved and supported. And I'm going to give a double matraca and do a Trevor Noah and give a matraca to Black women. Both of my friends are Black. One is Afro-Latina. And I'm just so grateful to Black women. They've been some of my greatest teachers and inspiration. So shout out to Black women. Matraca to them.
Yes, always, 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 always. Okay, well, with that, thank you so much, Ana Sheila. We are going to hear from our guest, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez and Miriam Lara Mejia. You'll learn a little bit more about them in just a minute and the way that they are chipping away at the iceberg of diet culture and so much more.
The month of February makes us think about love. And whether you're loving on your partner, family, or friends, don't forget to show love to the most important person in your life. That's you, boo. And few things are more important to take care of than when we show off every day. Nuestras caritas bonitas. Many things in life can dehydrate our skin, including weather, pollution, blue light, time spent in the sun, mask wearing, air travel, and air conditioning. But you can fight back against life's daily dehydrators with Clinique Moisture Surge 100 Hour. This supercharged gel cream hydrator delivers 100 hours of hydration for plump, glowing skin, even after washing your face. Its auto-replenishing technology helps skin create its own internal water source, delivering continuous, oil-free, and non-greasy radiant hydration. After 1 week, 99% of women who use it said it left their skin feeling deeply hydrated. That's a lot, y'all, 99%. And y'all know I love to stay hydrated, and that includes mi carita, especially in the winters, and yes, even in LA, y'all. So I also love that MS-100 is oil-free and that its auto-replenishing technology means that even after I put it on, it's going to keep rehydrating itself, keeping me extra moistured, and that just one use and you'll see improvement in your skin radiance. I mean, what's not to love about that? So this Valentine's Day, y'all, shop Clinique Moisture Surge 100 Hour for 20% off at Clinique.com. This discount is valid through 2/14, so hurry up.
Hello, hello, and welcome. I have Dr. Jimenez and Miriam here. Welcome to Tamarindo.
Muchas gracias por la invitación. I'm super excited to share this space with you and Miriam.
Yeah, it's so great. We know each other, so it feels like really fun to be in this conversation.
Yes, amazing, amazing. Great people find each other on the internet. It's very good to have you all here at Tamarindo. So I'm going to ask each of you, and I'll start with Dr. Jimenez, to just introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Yes, short version. I am proud Mexicana inmigrante from Huichol ancestry, from Nayarit. I was raised in Watsonville, California, grew up working in the field. So that really, I really want to say that because it really has grounded my lived experience of what it means to be a Mexicana inmigrante and Latina growing up in the United States, dealing with a lot of issues that I am extremely passionate about. And that's why I do the work I do as a sociologist from a social and racial justice lens.
And Miriam, I would love for you to also introduce yourself and tell us your why.
Yeah. So my name is Miriam Lara Mejia, and I grew up in Mexico, but my mom's American. So I grew up with bicultural, but in a different direction. And I grew up in a fat home, a fat family, and I have a fat body. And so that has sort of inspired a lot of my activism around this because I've gotten to experience it. So now I am a body positivity educator and activist and content creator, digital creator. And I share, you know, sort of the idea of like coming at from a perspective of intersectionality, of understanding how fat phobia and weight stigma impacts the Latino community.
Yes, very good. Thank you for sharing that. And you mentioned body positivity, so I'd like to stick with you, Miriam. How do you define body positivity, and how do you, basically, I think you live it, we see it in your various accounts. So talk to us about what it means and what it means to you personally.
Yeah, people kind of get a little kind of confused. You know, they worry about the word, but the word doesn't necessarily mean much. You know, the idea of having a positive relationship to our body, that is body positivity. However, we have to have two different parts here. One is sort of the history of body positivity. Where did it start? How did this concept start? And we know that it starts in the body liberation movements of the 60s, right? Civil rights movement, the fat acceptance movement, the disability justice movement, the second wave of feminism, a lot of body autonomy and body liberation is what creates this idea of like, why do we have some bodies that we consider good bodies? And why do we have some bodies that we consider not good bodies? Who decides that? Escalera, no, that direction, that hierarchy. And we know that, of course, it's influenced by white supremacy, colonialism, all these things, right? So when we start to acknowledge that there's this hierarchy, we start to realize that all bodies actually deserve, every person deserves to feel good about their bodies, to know that they are worthy of existing in this world. At the same time, and in tandem, is the idea that body positivity was not invented by these people. In fact, we are born body positive. We are born accepting and loving our bodies. We are taught that we shouldn't, right? We are taught that only that white person or only that skinny person or only that person with the straight hair is valuable. And then we begin in the search, in this battle with our body. So we are born with body positivity. And I also think it's really important to think about our ancestral communities. I was recently in Mexico talking with a person from the Nahuatl community. And she was like, the word fat for us is a really good word. We know we want to be fat. We want to have healthy, happy, moving, strong bodies, right? So there's this idea that perceptions are like something that is socially constructed. And at the end of the day, also, I think that as moms, as people that have the new generation coming up, as soon as you have a baby, you know, and you realize like you want this person to like be loving of their body. And so you begin, that's how I began kind of this work of being like, how do we lose our way? How do we unlearn this relation that was positive around our bodies, right? Around food, around movement, around just being, right? Existing and knowing that however you are okay. And when you learn that there's all this industry, right? The publicity industry, all kinds of industries that are trying to sell us this idea that our bodies are not good for a goal, then we realize that we can have a lot of power in interrupting that, right? And so a lot of the commitment around my activism and body positivity is around body positive parenting, the idea that we, our little kids deserve that. And, you know, of course, let's not talk about the intersection of like privilege and discrimination and the ways that our Latinx kids are receiving a message that they're not good in all these ways, right? So body positive is not just about body size. It's about all the ways that we are unique and all the ways that we are different and part of this huge diversity, right? And that is, for me, body positivity centers body diversity. And we can, here, we are three different people with very different bodies and different characteristics. Let's celebrate all those things.
Excellent. Quite a lot and lots of passion in how you approach it. And you've educated us in many ways. So Dr. Jimenez, you know, as a sociology professor, I mean, I think Medium kind of touched on a couple of the things that are happening in the universe to teach us to hate our bodies. So what would you add to that? Give us that, like the sociology of it.
I love hearing Medium. I love her passion and love the work that Medium does. I have so much respect and admiration, and just hearing Medium talk and say, it just fills my heart. And I hope that the audience who's listening can feel that as well, because that's what we want to do, right? Is transmit our passion and understanding of how systems of oppression have led for us to disembody from our bodies, from that positivity that we inherently have since we were born. From a sociological perspective, and Medium, you know, addressed some of this as well, so I'm just going to accentuate some of these ideas, is understanding diet culture as a system, right? And to be very intentional from a Latina, as an immigrant, from this lens, from a social and racial justice lens, is really centering diet culture as a system of oppression, as a racist system that is rooted in ideologies of white supremacy. And I said it, structural violence that deems bodies, certain bodies worthy and the norm. And Medium touched on this, you know, white bodies, thin bodies, heterosexual bodies, able bodies. These are the conversations that are missing in social media spaces. You know, the way that white influencers may be talking about diet culture is very different from the way that women of color are engaging in these conversations. And so if we understand that diet culture is structural and is systematic and is a system that has actually been in place and it's been part of the formation of the nation of the United States, beginning and looking at Black bodies, looking at Black people and how these bodies have been coerced and have been violently used and oppressed and so forth. Then looking at indigenous bodies and other bodies of color and how in the creation of the nation state that had led to not only the displacement, disenfranchisement, all this is actually part of diet culture. And so we need to have these courageous conversations and center them. It's moving away from the iceberg, right? What we see in the iceberg is lo de arriba, ¿verdad? Y the diet culture, like, oh, the diet cycle, intuitive eating. Yeah, I can cover that. But if we go deep, right? Vamos a nadar, vamos hasta el fondo. Let's go down the ocean, right? Deep to the root. Y ahí no queremos. And not everyone's willing to do that. But we women of color, nosotras sabemos porque nos impacta, sabemos esto. Entonces, that's the lens that I'm bringing in. It's institutional, systematic, and we need to begin to have these conversations to look at to talk about why, you know, Latinas or women of color have eating disorders, why there's food insecurity, why X, Y, and Z, microaggressions. Todo eso tiene que ver con nuestros cuerpos, tiene que ver con la desigualdad en la sociedad, el racismo, la discriminación. Yeah, all that is connected to diet culture.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's all connected. And this is why we wanted to talk a little bit about it, because if we can't be talking about immigrant rights, we can't be talking about anti-Black racism and all of these things without seeing the connection across all of these issues. And I think you've both illuminated how these are all interconnected. Now, I'd like to stick with you, Dr. Jimenez. Tell me, I know that you have, you're your professor, but you're also stepping into this space of occupying social media as a tool, as a vehicle to get these messages out. I'd like for you to tell me a little bit of, like, what is the unlearning? What are some of the hardest things that as you're peeling back how much this diet culture shows up in our lives as Latinas, you know, what are some of the things that you first had to tackle and peel back?
You know, it's such a simple question, but it's heavy.
And it's personal, right? It's personal, right?
Let's look at it, you know, as a sociologist and as a mujer, as a todo, all these different roles that we have, that Western society and white supremacy says that we need to separate them. And I'm here to say, like, no, I'm all these intersections. And what it is we were not born hating our bodies. So at the individual level, we think of the family as a social institution and the role that family has in perpetrating oppression. And how does that look like? Is estás gorda, estás flaca, siempre hay un problema con tu cuerpo, con tu personalidad, con tu ser. So when you hear messages that are not embracing of who you are, and then the second institution is the media, and then you hear all these other messages in the media that tell you what to look. It's just like this binary, like family says, señorita, calladita, te miras más bonita, tienes que ser virgen, todas estas cosas, all this stuff, right? And then you have the media saying, oh, you have to be sexually active. You have to, you need to know cómo conquistar el hombre, you know, like the heterosexuality, right? So it's just like, wait, I'm getting competing messages. Oh, wait. And then the institution of religion, right? Otra cosa, te tienes que casar virgen, tienes que casarte con un hombre, tienes, you know, so then, right? So all these institutions are sending us different messages, right? And if at home we don't get the love and care and honoring of who you are as a person and your body, then you are vulnerable to the rest of society, right? To all these other institutions that are going to transmit oppressive messages. And you may get lost in that process, and then you begin to diet, right? That's the iceberg. That's where you begin to, like, oh, then you're going to start a diet so you can shrink your body to fit, to be more socially accepted, to X, Y, and Z, right? So I guess that's my short answer.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the answer is that it's so interconnected. Everything is, and it's so deeply personal. So I want to honor and recognize your vulnerability in this space, because I could tell that for both of you, for me as well, right, on all of our listeners, it's very, very personal to be navigating these competing messages, and especially as Latinas, that, you know, ni santa ni puta, right? We know sí. What that means. So Miriam, I love, and you've both sort of touched on this, that we're born loving our bodies. It makes me think of the yoga pose, happy baby. You know, like, babies love their roles, and they're happy, and they're not thinking about the messages that are about to hit them once they're coherent and able to understand. So talk to me more about this, notion of loving your body from the onset. And how you've uncovered that path back. And because this is what I see in the work that you do, Miriam, is that you're showing us a way back to that.
I mean, I want to be clear that there's a lot of compassion here, because it is a societal problem, right? This idea of hating our bodies is, like, you know, we've said, religion and economy and racism and colonialism and all these different things, right? So if you're hearing this and you're like, I cannot see myself in a mirror, I cannot be in the photos, I hate my belly, mi panza, that's like the number one thing, right? Everybody is, we hate our panza, right? This part of our body that we all have, right? So if you're hearing this and you're like, I have that, just know that this is something that is very systemic, right? And it's generational. And I think one of the biggest parts for me of this activism is kind of learning about fat phobia. I mean, fat phobia at its core is the idea that people in larger bodies are inferior, right? And I want us to really kind of highlight that, because this is, I mean, in a society that we're, you know, people who are in social justice, we know if you think another human being is inferior, that is the source of the violence that we've seen in all forms, right? So, you know, diet culture really has those roots that you think you cannot have that fat body. And if you have a fat body, imagine all the people we have fat bodies living our life thinking we are inferior. Like, that is sort of the pervasive thing. What I think about, you know, being born body positive, and I mean, again, let's not get stuck with the words. I feel like if people do body neutral, there's a lot of ways. I use body positive because I love this idea for my child to know that he is good. I know how he is, right? So I use that word, but if you're listening, use whatever words you have. I really feel like there's a power in social media. I do think that there's this incredible thing. My whole feed is filled with fat people of all kinds, of people with disability, of people of all different skin colors and all kinds of things. And I think that is a huge reminder, right, of that we are diverse. We've always been diverse. It's always been diversity, and you are part of it. You're not up here or down here, you're just one enormous part of that. So that's one piece. I think reading and educating myself about the impact of fat phobia, about weight stigma, about the racist history of fat phobia. I think one of the premier books around self-love is The Body is Not an Apology by Sonia Renee Taylor. She kind of explains a little bit about this, that we are not learned. You're not learning from me about being body positive. You're just learning to recognize the messages that told you were not good enough, right? That is the goal. Is you have it. It's already in you, right? And it's not kind of going back. It's going forward. It's sort of like kind of weeding through this mess, right? I think there's so many books, right? Naomi Wolf as well has one that is just this idea of like, as soon as you start recognizing, why do you shave? You shave because you like it, or because someone told you that women should not have hairy legs, right? And it's like, as soon as you start seeing like who benefits from you hating your body, you hating your eyebrows. I think one of the biggest things right now, the curly hair movement. How many Black and Latina women have done, I mean, just have not loved their hair because they were not given any products that were for their hair. They were not giving any, you know, and now we're seeing this like embracing of this beautiful thing that you are. You have curly hair. It is not good or it is bad. It just is, right? So it's sort of like really being part of a culture that is helping us see how we were brought up on body hate and what we need to do in our own lives, right? Also, I think it's really important to recognize privilege. You know, I'm a white Latina. I don't live with my suegra who's constantly attacking me for my weight or my son's food, right? Like people are living in a lot of different spaces. And I recognize it's a huge privilege in sort of being like, let's love ourselves. And it's not as superficial as that. It really is profound. There is nothing more radical than knowing that you are, as you are, beautiful, incredible, and powerful.
Do you want to hang out with us in person? You're invited to Self Love Con Corazon, an evening of a conversation, workshop, and connecting. Uncover the limitations or stories that may be getting in the way of fulfilling self-love. Learn tools to start to break past these limitations and stories, and identify and set powerful intentions for the rest of the year. This is happening on Thursday, February 23rd, starting at 6:30 p.m. Give yourself plenty of time to find parking. The program will officially start around 7. This will be at the Pop Hub, an independent bookshop and creative learning space that amplifies marginalized voices in Highland Park. Plus, our good friends at Good Juju Coffee, a family-owned coffee maker, will have giveaways and café de olla. Support them at goodjujucoffee.com. Self-Love Con Corazon is a donation-based event, and you can reserve your seat today at tamarindopodcast.com/event. Once again, this is on Thursday, February 23rd at the Pop Hub in Highland Park.
Anna Shayla and I love reading books, and we love supporting Latina-led small businesses. You can join us in doing both by ordering books from xolobooks.com.
Sholo Books amplifies intersectional and anti-colonialist literature written by Black, Indigenous, and people of color through the selling, promotion, and celebration of books from around the world. Right now, you can order books like Olga Dies Dreaming, You Sound Like a White Girl, and Para Chicas Fuertes de Corazón Tierno y Piel Canela, the Spanish version of For Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and Tender Hearts. You can get 10% off your entire order when you use the offer code TAMARINDO at checkout. That's TAMARINDO, all caps, at checkout at sholobooks.com. And you can also get the link to this bookstore both on our website and on the notes of this episode.
This has been a fantastic conversation, so much to unpack, and it's messy, right? It's so messy to navigate, to go under, to literally scuba dive and see the bottom of that iceberg. So you all have given us so much to think about. So I want to ask each of you, these are the questions that we ask all of our guests, and it doesn't have to be related to body positivity or diet culture. It could be whatever you'd like. So I want to ask each of you, what is one thing that you are celebrating? And I'll start with Medium.
I am celebrating that I'm working on a podcast, and it's a podcast that covers all things fat, kind of really demystifying some of these beliefs that are behind what diet culture is.
Yes, we can't wait. We love it. We love it. And for you, Dr. Jimenez, what's one thing that you're celebrating? What gets your matraca?
In alignment with Medium, I just actually released my podcast yesterday. It's called Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. And so exactly about these conversations.
Perfect. So we got a couple of podcasts to subscribe to. We can't wait to listen to both of these. Now, sticking with you, Dr. Jimenez, what's one thing that you're done with canceling, putting en la basura?
Que ya no más, no more being silenced, that our voices are needed as women of color. So to continue telling my truth and the lens in which I see diet culture.
Excellent. And Miriam, what are you putting in la basura?
I'm putting in la basura replicating the things that have harmed us. We all know the crítica, right? La estás gordita, subiste de peso, and we've all lived it. And now it's our time to darle moche, ya no más.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And now, lastly, Medium, how do you stay grounded? Where do you get your calma?
I get my calma from moving my body. And that's why I talk about movement for all bodies, because, you know, it's not for weight loss. It's for like being able to live my life the way I want to live, being able to parent the way I want to parent.
Yes, the joy of moving our bodies. And Dr. Jimenez, how do you stay grounded? How do you get your calma?
Two things, too. Also, movement. I enjoy that very much. And I like to spend time in my altar and play my flute and my drum and just ground myself spiritually.
Oh, I love that. So an altar and playing the drums. Beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so, so much. I'm going to give you one last chance for any like last parting message that you want to leave our listeners with. And I'll start with Medium.
I want to leave you with this. All of this is a process. Every bit of our trying to have a better life for ourselves and our kids is a process. No one is in the other side. So if you're just starting to hear about diet culture, or you've lived it, or fat fob, all these things, just know that you can just start in the process and be in community with a lot of people who are doing this, you know, dismantling, unlearning work.
Yes, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I know Ana Sheila loves to remind folks to be gracious with themselves. And as we're unlearning and unpacking this, I mean, you have no idea how many times I've felt like, oh, I know about pushing against diet culture, but then I'll still catch myself perpetuating it. Right? And then you're like, ah. And so if you're at that stage where you're at least identifying and doing the, you know, that's already progress. And yes, take your time. We're all unlearning this together. And Dr. Jimenez, what is your final message to our listeners today?
To be compassionate in your journey, wherever you are in your life, that self-compassion is hard work. It's hard work. Be compassionate with yourself, because society is not compassionate. So you have to do that with yourself. And know that this compassion is a journey, and that your journey is not linear, right? So there might be events, things that happen that might trigger you from your childhood or something in your life. And you may feel that you're taking a step back, or que estás retrocediendo, you're going back, but you're not. So know that healing is not linear, and you are wherever you need to be in your journey, and your journey is beautiful and unique.
Excellent conversation. Excellent tips from Anna Sheila. This has been a fabulous conversation, and I just want to tell you all, thank you for listening, and please write us a review. Share this episode with a friend. We want to grow, and we really thank all of you for listening.
Yes, yes, yes. And if you are in LA, we're so excited to get to see you live on February 23rd at the Pop Hop at 6:30 p.m. PST, obviously, because we're in California. And I'm just excited, and I'll be back in LA, y'all. So if y'all are in LA, you'll see me there. Maybe you'll see me on the streets. Say hi if you know what I look like. I'm just excited to be back and be in community with everyone, whether it's in your ears or in person. So love y'all.
Yes, yes. All right. Bye.
Abrazos, besos. Ciao.
Tamarindo Podcast is Brenda Gonzalez and Ana Sheila Victorino. Our producers are Mitzi Hernandez and Augusto Martinez of Sonoro Media. Our theme song is by Jeff Ricards.
If you want to support our work, please rate and review Tamarindo Podcast on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with a friend. Get in touch with us at tamarindopodcast.com.
Cuando mi arrendador dijo que el alquiler podría ser más barato si fuéramos amigos con beneficios. Había oído hablar de acoso sexual en el lugar de trabajo, pero en mi casa, eso es discriminación en la vivienda basada en el sexo.
La gente de Bienes Raíces dijo que estaríamos más cómodos viviendo en un vecindario diferente con gente como nosotros. Por suerte, conocíamos nuestros derechos. Es ilegal asustar a los posibles propietarios para que se alejen de ciertos vecindarios en función de raza o nacionalidad.
Si usted cree que sufrió discriminación o tiene preguntas sobre sus derechos, comuníquese con Fair Housing Foundation, Fundación de Vivienda Justa, al 800-446-3247 o también en línea en fhfca.org. La vivienda justa es su derecho. Este es un anuncio de servicio público de Fair Housing Foundation y respaldado por el Departamento de Vivienda y Desarrollo Urbano HUD bajo la subvención de FIPPI, FPEI, 220099.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.